Thank you, members. We're looking for one of our bill doctors, too. Good to see you. All right. I'm calling to order the House Education Policy Committee. Our first order of business is to approve the minutes. Representative Frazier, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from Tuesday, February 7th?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I would like to move to approve the minutes.
Any discussion, members, for the minutes from yesterday, Tuesday, February 7th? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We do have minutes. So our first order of business is actually to hear a presentation from Helsby. I'll let them go over the initials again for the group that we refer to as Helsby. And as you remember, members, we've already heard an overview of what their legislative priorities are going to be. And then we'll hear their presentation detailing what they're bringing forward. And then we have members of the committee that will be presenting the different priorities as bills. And we do have five different bills being brought forward on behalf of Helsby that we'll be working on both in this committee and in our Ed Finance Committee. So with that, I think we'll start our presentation, and I'll let you get set up. And when you're ready, you can introduce yourself. There we are.
All right.
Please proceed.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Dr. Elena Bailey. I am the Interim Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. And I have with me here today my colleague, Michelle Hirschfott, who is our rulemaking attorney. And we're just going to provide a brief kind of overview, a walkthrough of the key sections of the five bills before you. So the first would establish a teacher residency pilot program. By teacher residency, and this is something that's defined in Minnesota rules, is a year-long clinical experience that provides intensive mentorship by a cooperating teacher. It involves a lot of professional development as well and built-in learning opportunities and assessments for our teacher candidates. So this would establish a pilot program that would put 400 candidates through a teacher residency, that's in Section 1, to complete that robust year-long clinical experience. It would prioritize grants to teacher preparation providers to be able to serve those candidates, particularly prioritizing teacher candidates of color, as well as candidates in Greater Minnesota, and teacher candidates that would fill shortage areas that are defined in statute. What would be involved or outlined in this pilot program are a few different fiscal components. So one would be $3,000 for each candidate to go towards the cost of tuition. There is language in the bill that would encourage grant recipients to reduce the cost of tuition or make it zero for those candidates as well. It would provide a $40,000 stipend to those individuals for that year-long clinical residency. This is the key component that would provide them a living wage. So while they are doing their year-long clinical experience, you can think of that as perhaps a year-long student teaching experience, but plus the added robust teacher mentorship, professional development, things like that. They would be paid a living wage while they're doing that year-long experience. It also involves a request for districts to help cover benefits for those candidates while they're serving that year. It would provide a $3,500 stipend for their mentor during that year, so the cooperating teacher that's providing that professional development and support throughout that year would get a stipend themselves. And then additionally, it has one-time funding that would allow the state to contract with an outside vendor that could walk our teacher preparation providers themselves through how to facilitate these residency programs in an effective manner. There is language in here as well that would ask or require of those candidates who receive this funding and participate in this program to then serve in the district that they are working in for 3 years upon completion of their teacher preparation program. So it's an investment in these candidates that would work towards their retention and their service in those districts. Section 2 just outlines the appropriation language for this bill.
My name is Michelle Hirschfott, and I'll be walking through the second bill in front of you today, which is HF 1137, supporting heritage language teachers. So this bill would create a specific pathway for heritage language teachers that embeds support and mentorship into the licensure via portfolio process. The license review portfolio process is a non-traditional pathway in Minnesota that allows a teacher to demonstrate how they meet the standards of the profession without going through teacher preparation. This bill would also allow these teachers to use cultural expertise and their language proficiency to meet content standards. For some context, in Minnesota, there are currently zero teachers who hold a Tier 3 or Tier 4 license in Somali, Hmong, or Karen. This bill would help those teachers who are either serving on a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license or using a permission to obtain a Tier 3 or Tier 4 license by honoring their expertise and their language proficiency. The second section provides how the funding would work to support 50 teachers a year through this portfolio process, including removing barriers such as licensure fees, portfolio fees, exam fees, and support mentorship, and additionally support an additional staff person at Pelsby to support these candidates each year as they work their way to a Tier 3 or Tier 4 license in their heritage language.
All right, returning to HF 1257, and I realize we're going through these very quickly, so we look forward to answering your questions later. So this bill, what we call this removing barriers to licensure, involves quite a few different pieces. So in Section 1, this is a simple change that would remove the requirement that individuals who hold what we call an innovative program permission renew that annually. So these are individuals often working at alternative high schools. Right now, they have to apply each year for that program permission, which is ineffective and adds additional paperwork for the districts and the teacher. This would allow them to request that permission in alignment with the renewal of their license. So it just reduces the burden there. Sections 2, 5, and 6 through 8 provide what we call the BA exemption. So before tier licensure, we used to have what was called the non-licensed community expert, and that no longer exists. So this would provide a pathway for those individuals who are in the visual and performing arts, for example, as well as native speakers of world languages, to get a tiered license, and it would be a carve-out that allows them to move throughout the tiers, very similar to our career and technical education pathway. So there's a BA exemption already that exists for those folks in CTE. This would do a similar path for folks in visual performing arts and native languages, native speakers of world languages. Sections 3 and 4 help clarify and ease the Tier 1 and Tier 2 application process. So right now, through experience we've learned, it's a bit difficult for districts and individuals when they're applying for Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses because the individual is applying, but they have to have the job offer from the district, and the district's trying to work on the timing and information they need to be able to fill the post, but the individual is the one who gets information from us. So this would allow them to apply jointly so that we could share that data, and it actually would help us expedite how we process these. So it would be better for districts and for the applicants themselves. Section 9 is a move that would help with our reciprocity for out-of-state teachers. So currently we have teachers who are out-of-state. If they've, let's say, been working for 20 years in Wisconsin and they hold their full professional license, when they come here, they have to get a Tier 3 license and then work for 3 years before they can get their Tier 4. This would allow them to use that teaching experience they've had in that other state to immediately get a Tier 4 license. So we would just allow their out-of-state teaching experience to count. It's a way to honor their expertise and, again, to help incentivize more people to come and teach in our classes here. Sections 10 and 11 would remove licensure exam requirements for individuals who have completed teacher preparation in Minnesota. So I will point out we have provided a handout that summarizes some national research and that highlights the issues, particularly with both basic skills and licensure exams when it comes to the barriers they pose for individuals, particularly our teachers of color and our Indigenous teachers, and why Pelsby is proposing removing that. Currently, we have about 835 individuals who hold a Tier 2 license in the state who have completed teacher preparation, and the only reason they can't get their full professional license is they haven't passed these exams. Of those, nearly 40% are people of color. So this is an indication that there is an issue, and Pelsby proposes removing that, I think as we shared a week or two ago, because we know that there is built-in assessment of these candidates through their teacher preparation programs before they are recommended for licensure. We will say it also removes an additional financial burden. On average, each of those candidates has to pay $214 for their subject matter and pedagogical exams, which, particularly if you're young, but for many individuals, that's a lot of money. So this would remove several barriers for those folks. Section 12 would create a short call substitute pilot. This came out of work from conversations among many legislators, including, you know, Representative Mueller here. We've had great conversations on the need for this. So this would establish a pilot that would allow individuals who either hold an AA degree and then get training from their district, or who are already educational support professionals working in a district, to get their short call sub license. Currently, if you don't meet the requirements for a Tier 1 license, you can't get that short call sub, so this would help meet that shortage by opening up the eligibility requirements for a short call sub license. The final sections, 13 through 15, are simply modifications to the two grants that Pelsby administers, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Educators, Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant, and the Teacher Mentorship Grant. We've heard feedback from our stakeholders and grant recipients that some of the timing of when they publish their reports, for example, or how long they're allowed to administer those funds, makes it very difficult for them to do the impactful work that this state funding is supporting. So these are small tweaks to the timing of that would allow them to do their work more effectively. That is, in summary, all of the items in the Removing Barriers to Licensure bill.
The next bill we'll walk through, Michelle Hirschbach, for the record, the next bill we'll walk through is HF 1268, which is what we refer to as our Operational Excellence Bill. For those who have been in an education committee over the past several years, these provisions will be extremely familiar, as we have brought many of these forward since the creation of tiered licensure. So I will go through most of these at a higher level, but please feel free to ask specific questions as they come up. Section 1 clarifies our board responsibilities, that is, that a teacher must hold a license. Sections 2 through 10 update terminology, so again, technical changes to different definitions throughout Chapter 122A. Section 10 is our one policy provision in this bill, what we consider to be a policy change. It would be modification to our board membership in an effort to obtain two additional teacher members to our board, again, in an effort to streamline some of our work, as some of our teacher members are the only members who can do, for example, ethics work. So this would add two members. Section 12 removes language that requires us to obtain office space, which we did several years ago. Sections 13 through 15, again, clarifies duties specific to provider approval, holding and maintaining a registry of all licensed teachers, and our rulemaking. Section 16, again, updates terminology, and you'll see this a lot. We're replacing the word candidate with the word applicant. For both our rules and statutes, typically when we refer to a candidate, we're talking about an individual who's going through teacher preparation, so they're a teacher candidate. However, we want to use the word license applicant when appropriate if this person is seeking a license. So again, technical in nature. Sections 17 through 18 streamline our data and reporting requirements, and particularly removes redundant reporting either at the district or provider level. Sections 19 through 21, again, updates terminology. So you may see something like speech language pathologist added in. We're not adding or removing professions. We are merely using the language that we then use throughout 122A or through our rules, so technical in nature. Section 22 corrects outdated citation that is not correct. Section 23, again, more updates to terminology. Section 24 clarifies our responsibility to maintain STAR reporting, which is our district reporting and compliance work at Pelsby. And then finally, sections 25 through 37 is a lot of technical update to our terminology and processes that is required by our board.
All right, so I will do the final bill walkthrough at HF 1224, and this would be modifications to tiered licensure. So Section 1 would modify eligibility for Tier 2 licenses to align it with either enrollment in teacher preparation, which is a current requirement, or expertise, which would be having that master's degree or equivalent, and again, this is a current requirement. It would just remove the other options, which are not quite the equivalent. Those individuals would still be able to get a license. They would just be eligible for the Tier 1 license instead. Section 2 would remove a pathway to a full professional license based on experience alone. So Pelsby would do this, proposes this to ensure all professionally licensed teachers have met state standards through teacher preparation or portfolio. So not necessarily through a traditional higher ed route, but through that, through our alternative preparation providers, or through the portfolio pathway. In relation to this, while highlighting, you'll see on the right side of that screen, Pelsby is currently in the final stages of a 3.5-year-long rulemaking project that updates the standards of the profession. This is work, and I think this is important to acknowledge, that involves meeting and getting feedback from hundreds and hundreds of teachers who are defining the professions for themselves. They're saying, this is who we are, these are the standards of what it means to be a teacher in this state. And so for that reason, Pelsby wants to honor that work and how teachers are defining their profession and saying, you want to enter the classroom and have that full professional license, you should demonstrate meeting those standards. You can do it through an innovative pathway, but that is the bar for what it means to be a teacher in this respected profession. There is language that would ensure individuals who are en route to use that experience pathway would still be able to do that, so not punishing those individuals who are currently en route to use this pathway. Section 3 comes from stakeholder feedback. This is language that, you know, many of you have heard. We've discussed these modifications over the past several years, but we've had great conversations with districts and educators on, you know, what are their needs if these changes happen. And so the response to that is to include providing funding that would go to districts, charter schools, service cooperatives, or coalitions between those districts and teacher preparation providers to enroll their Tier 1 or Tier 2 teachers into teacher preparation. So again, not removing a pathway without providing the ability to keep those folks in the license and on their way to getting that professional Tier 3 or Tier 4 license. As we walk through this bill, we think it is important to acknowledge a few misconceptions that often come with our proposal to modify tiered licensure and to add some clarification by providing facts. So one, there's often a misconception that by making these modifications, we remove teachers from the classroom. That is not the case. While it may impact which license an educator holds, they are still allowed to be in the classroom. They are still allowed to work and hold a license. Some of those individuals would move from a Tier 2 to a Tier 1 license. However, something to acknowledge, and then we have a separate handout on this that lists shortage areas that you have. In statute currently, if you work in a shortage area on a Tier 1 license, you can renew that indefinitely. As you may notice on that list, nearly all of our teacher licensure areas are considered shortage areas, and that's just a statewide one. We have a separate list that is by region. There's additional areas, as well as if you are an individual who helps close the gap between our teacher diversity and our student diversity, that is in statute filling a shortage. So all of those individuals can renew that Tier 1 license indefinitely, so there's no risk of them being pushed out of the classroom. So I think that's an important fact for this. The other change or misconception is that by making these modifications, we'll be harming teachers of color. As we've kind of shared earlier, Pelsby asserts that it's important that we honor teachers' definition of their profession, their standards, and what they've said this is, means to be a member of the teaching profession. The majority of our teachers of color in the state hold a Tier 3 or Tier 4 license, so this has zero impact on them whatsoever. It does, of course, impact some of our teachers of color who hold, it's a few hundred individuals, who hold a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license. And Pelsby supports removing barriers that would keep them from getting their Tier 3 or Tier 4 license. So that's why you saw the other bills related to removing the testing requirements, right? Providing funding to get them enrolled in teacher preparation. Items that remove structural barriers to them getting that full professional license. But we also affirm the capacity of people of color and Indigenous people to meet standards. I personally, as a woman of color, find it offensive to assume that I am incapable of meeting a standard, right? I fully believe in that ability. I wouldn't be here. I grew up in Minnesota, went to Robbinsdale Cooper, got my education through the IB program, got my PhD from UC, right, and my master's from NYU. We're capable. But we just need to ensure and help people to meet those standards, not diminish their value by assuming they can't do that. So I think that's an important fact to state at this committee. The final misconception is that these changes fail to consider district hiring concerns. Again, that final section of the bill really came from conversations with districts saying, We know that we're in a shortage. We know that you want to keep your individuals in the classroom, and that with these changes, you maybe want to ensure they can get enrolled in prep or get their license through portfolio. So let's get funding to you so that you can help those individuals that you see are bringing value to your community and your classroom. So it's not going to change who they can hire. There are no changes to that, right? Again, the only shift might be which tier license they get, but it doesn't change who they can hire or how long they can keep them in the classroom. In fact, we're proposing funding so they can get them that permanent license so they can stay in the profession forever, hopefully. So those are just some common misconceptions we wanted to address. And then I'll just put on here, you can see if you don't have the handout, just so you have a visual here of all of the different statewide shortage areas, which covers nearly every subject. And again, there are additional shortage areas related to for each particular region in the state. And then if you are an individual of color, filling the gap between students and teachers. So with that, I believe that's all we have. And thank you.
Thank you. And our intent right now then is to turn to the individual bills that were just highlighted and put into the context of the overall proposal from PELC. And with that, we'd like to bring up Representative Sensenmuir for our first bill. And we'll let you get settled in with your testifiers.
Thank you, everyone. And before I start, I wanted to say that I had been told by a more senior member that when you give your first bill presentation, you're supposed to bring snacks for the committee.
True.
And then I said that today to Representative Hill, and he said that someone was giving me the runaround. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure which it is, but I did bring mochi donuts, which if people haven't had them, are very good. So committee members, please, from both sides of the aisle, please come try. There's a bunch of different flavors. I split them in half because I know that we're Minnesotans and no one can take the whole thing. But thank you for being here today. And I believe that since I'm not a committee member, I'm going to need.
Yes. All right. So our first bill up for consideration is House File 1138, offered by Representative Sensenmuir. Members, it's our intention to re-refer this bill to Education and Finance. We're hoping to be able to do the presentation and discussion and move on after 3:45 today. Vice Chair Hill, would you please move House File 1138 before the committee to be re-referred to the bill to Education and Finance?
That would be my motion, Chair Pryor.
It's hard to talk behind the mask. All right. Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. All right. We have the bill before us, and welcome to the committee. Thank you for the treats, Representative Sensenmuir. Before you introduce the bill, I understand that you do have an author's amendment that you'd like to get added to the bill so it's in the shape that you would like to discuss it. And I will have Vice Chair Hill also offer the author's amendment, which is the A2 amendment. Vice Chair Hill?
Yes, Chair, I'd move the A2 amendment before the committee.
All right. All in favor of, Representative Sensenmuir, would you briefly address what is the author's amendment, and then we'll take a vote.
Yeah, so the A2 amendment just gets the bill in the shape that I would like. This is specifically related to some consultations that PELSB has had with the Office of Higher Education during the drafting stages about which agency was best suited to administer the grant. Both agencies agreed that it made sense for PELSB to be the primary grant administrator, but also to include an option for PELSB to contract with the Office of Higher Education if needed. This is a practice that PELSB has done with other teacher preparation grants, and so this language just makes that clear.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Representative. Any questions at this point on the amendment, the A2 amendment to the bill? All right, seeing none, then all in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, thank you. The amendment is adopted. All right, Representative Sensenmuir, please present House File 1138 as amended. And if you would again introduce yourself to our committee.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Samantha Sensenmuir. I'm the representative from District 63A, representing South Minneapolis. I'm honored to be here today talking to you about House File 1138, which would establish a teacher residency grant pilot program. This pilot program would support 400 teacher candidates in a year-long student teaching experience or a residency. This program would support 200 teachers over the next 2 years. And this program is a complement to what is already in the governor's proposal to provide student teaching stipends for all student teachers for 12-week student teaching experiences at $5,000 per student. We think that that is a great start, but we also think that this program goes a little bit deeper in supporting and, as I'll kind of explain, retaining the kind of teacher candidates that we really need in the classroom in front of our students. So with the teacher residency program, teacher candidates would get support, including mentorship from a co-teacher, so an established teacher who has teaching experience, who can offer observation experience, feedback, just kind of be a listening ear. And it also offers a real financial investment in these teacher candidates. It offers a $40,000 stipend, district-paid benefits, and free or low-cost tuition during the teacher residency. This program would also offer supports for school districts. School districts would receive stipends for the mentor teachers. I think this piece is really important because, you know, we know that there are already amazing veteran teachers at our schools who are offering support, especially, you know, oftentimes offering support to teachers of color that are coming into the classroom that are not currently being paid for that labor, paid for that work. So this would ensure that we are giving, you know, a financial incentive to the mentor teachers. And this would also offer support for districts in terms of statewide support for grantees. This matters, and this is important, one, because of the workforce shortage. So we talk a lot about, in our education committees, about the workforce shortage we have right now in relationship to teachers. We also have a huge retention problem with teachers, right? We know that there are people who want to go into the classroom, they try it out, and then they don't stay for a variety of reasons. So nearly one-third of teachers leave the profession within the first 5 years of teaching. And we see this teacher residency pilot program as one way that could help solve that. The residencies put student learning at the center of the preparation experience. They provide intense clinical work, intentional alignment among the residency, school district, and institutions of higher education. And this coherence results in a substantial return on investment, which manifests in three distinct ways. It gets us more effective new teachers in the classroom. It gets us a diverse pipeline into the teaching profession, and it gets us higher teacher retention rates. We know that right now student teaching can be a huge financial burden and barrier to completing a teacher preparation program and obtaining a Tier 3 license, and this program looks to solve that. You know, I can say that when I graduated from college over 10 years ago, I did a teacher residency program, not here in Minnesota, but in a different state where I was paid a salary of about $20,000. And I did not complete that program. And one of the main barriers that I had was really just the financial cost and how much I felt like I was giving to the program versus how much support I felt like I was getting and really that financial piece. So we know that right now there are great burdens and barriers to becoming a teacher. We know that we need more teachers in the classroom, but we also know that we need a more diverse teaching force. And I think that this is one step to solving that. So with that, Madam Chair, I do have testifiers here today to speak in support and speak about the bill, and I would yield my time to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmuller. I have first on the list Pat Pratt Cook. If you can come forward and get settled, and again introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Pat Pratt Cook. I'm the Executive Chief of Human Resources for the St. Paul Public Schools, and I'm here today to testify in favor of HF 1138. I'd like to thank Representative Sensenmuller for bringing this bill forward to the committee. You said it all in your presentation. As you all know, there's a significant teacher shortage both here in the state of Minnesota as well as across the country. And this shortage is really going to be a reality for us in the near future, in the immediate future, and actually in the distant future. It's not going to go away anytime soon. Given this shortage, it's really imperative that we continue to find ways to strengthen our pipeline. Districts don't have the ability to do this alone. We really need your support at the state level to really be able to grow our teacher pipeline. Large numbers of career teachers are retiring. Many teachers are transitioning out of the profession and into different careers, and there are considerably smaller numbers of individuals who are actually going into teacher preparation program. This decrease started prior to COVID and has really been exacerbated by the pandemic. So given that, we know that this issue is really urgent in terms of us taking action moving forward. The availability of state funds to support and facilitate districts around the state to develop and expand their Grow Your Own Teacher Pipeline programs is really a win for districts across the state. St. Paul has had a residency program for the past 7 years in partnership with St. Thomas University. And to date, we've had 176 teachers participate in that program. 60% of those participants have been individuals of color. The residency program at St. Paul, the single most effective strategy to date has been this residency program in terms of us both recruiting special ed teachers as well as BIPOC teachers to our district. We know that time and money are critical factors and barriers to individuals going into the teaching profession. This bill will make it more affordable as well as help to incentivize individuals to become teachers. The residency model allows candidates to spend a full year in their own district working with students, families, as well as members of the community. This model provides more time in the classroom directly working with students, which in turn really helps to facilitate teachers becoming really strong and effective teachers more quickly. The reality of the residency program is that they are prepared and ready to be effective day one. We see the residency model as providing a seamless pathway from the teacher prep program to becoming the teacher of record in a classroom. And I'm going to insert one thing extra. Now that I heard more information about HF 1257 about removing the barriers, I really wanted to use this as an opportunity to be able to plug that bill. We've really been ramping up our recruitment efforts. We just recently, as a district, did a HBCU visit. Actually, we visited four HBCUs. One of the challenges for us in terms of recruiting teachers from other states or even newly prepared teachers from other states to Minnesota is going to be all of the additional hoops and financial costs of them becoming fully certified in the state of Minnesota. So please know that I also support that bill as well.
Thank you.
In closing, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to address the committee, and I urge you to support both HF 1138 as well as HF 1257. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll count that as public testimony on the other bill, too. And just a reminder to our testifiers, and I do apologize, but we do have a lot of people that will be speaking today. And we've asked for 2 minutes of testimony, and we'll actually try to keep people on track for staying to the 2 minutes. Our committee legislative assistant actually will be timing and can hold up the cards that indicate the green one is 1 minute, the yellow is the 30 seconds, and we have a red for if you can see the colors. We have a lot of folks and a lot of bills today, so we appreciate it if we can stay on track. All right, thank you. Next up, we have Shania Tate. Shania, I'm taking another look at that.
You said it correctly first, Shania Tate. Thank you.
All right, please proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Shania Tate, and I'm here to testify in favor of HF 1138, and I would like to thank Representative Censor Mura for bringing this bill to the committee. I am also an HBCU alum, graduating in 2020 from Spelman College. So I would also like to amend for the bill HF 1257. However, I'm presenting on HF 1138. I would like to say after completing my bachelor's in biology, I felt that there was no place in education for me. It wasn't until I taught as a science teacher through the St. Paul Online School and then further found out about the SUTOR program. The SUTOR program was able to grant me the opportunity to be within a cohort with educators of color, and then also allow me to receive my Tier 3 teaching license and my master's degree in elementary education within 15 months. This urged me to become an educator because I was able to allow students to be able to see themselves through me or other teachers of colors and have their teachers represent our community. And that's something that I did not see growing up here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, teachers of color that represented me. So I wanted to be that change, and that has driven my passion to become a teacher. Not only that, I have been the recipient of the Minnesota Aspiring Teachers Color of Grant and the Minnesota Student Teacher Grant to be able to afford me to graduate with my master's free of charge. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh,
sorry. In closing, thank you for this opportunity to address the committee. I urge to support HF 1138 and HF 1257. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Congratulations on your completion of licensing, and thanks for teaching in Minnesota and St. Paul.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, I have Kavari Fletcher. And if you can introduce yourself again and get your correct pronunciation perfect and proceed with your testimony.
You said it right. All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, or Chair and members. My name is Kavari Fletcher, and I'm here to testify in favor of HF 1138. I would like to thank Representative Censor Mira for bringing this bill to the committee. And here is my story. So about 9 years ago, I was fresh out of college, a brand new mother. And after I had graduated with my bachelor's, I told myself that I was never going back to school. Financially, it just didn't seem possible. But I quickly fell into education right after that and became a teaching assistant. And I told myself that at that time it was good enough. Being a teaching assistant was good enough because I was helping my community, and that was it. Well, life happened and I stayed, and I was still a teaching assistant. I hadn't put a dent in my loans despite paying every month on my income-based plan. And I stayed because I became comfortable because I was scared financially. With racial inequities to the forefront and no one there to guide me or see my true educator strengths, I stayed because I cared. I wanted to be there for the children in my community and be an example to my daughter who attended school with me. I thought what I was doing was good enough for my community. Then the pandemic hit and I realized it wasn't. Fast forward 9 years later, I found people who were in my corner encouraging me to take the leap of faith to become a teacher. Joining SUTER has unlocked possibilities for my future I never thought were possible. It gave me the flexibility I needed, and thankfully it has not added to my $30,000 of school loan debt. Through SUTER, I was connected to state grants and scholarships, which have paid for my master's. I have a group of people, including professors, my mentor, classmates, and colleagues who are constantly cheering me on and pushing me to be better. The amount of confidence I've gained through this program is just in just a half a year is amazing. My wish is to pass it on and give the same encouragement and mentorship to the next generation of educators and allies. In closing, thank you for this opportunity to address the committee. I urge you to support HF1138. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fletcher. That was very inspiring. We're glad that you came today. We have next on Zoom, Dr. Kathleen Campbell. And if you can hear us, Dr. Campbell, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Kathleen Campbell, and I'm the CEO of the National Center for Teacher Residencies, or NCTR for short. I'm here today to voice my support of HF1138, the Teacher Residency Pilot Program. And at NCTR, we facilitate a network of nearly 50 teacher residency programs across 26 states. And three of those residency programs are right in Minnesota, with partnerships between Minneapolis Public Schools, St. Paul Public Schools, a consortium of charter schools, and the University of St. Thomas. We regularly collect data from the programs in our network to examine the impact of the residency model on districts, schools, teachers, and students. NCTR applauds Minnesota's effort to support this effective approach to teacher preparation. And in fact, our impact data on the residency movement suggests it's a really powerful model. For example, 97% of principals in our survey reported that participation in a residency program improved student achievement at their school. Teacher residency graduates have also had a higher retention rate. More than 7,000 teachers have graduated from NCTR partner residency programs with an 89% retention rate after 3 years. In comparison, the national norm after 3 years is roughly around 50% for other programs. Teacher residencies serve as a pipeline for teachers who reflect the diversity of the communities they serve. 57% of residents in NCTR's partner programs identify as people of color. Teacher residencies offer states and districts the opportunity to have a consistent, reliable pipeline of effective new teachers. And when done in partnership, residencies provide candidates with a learning experience that prepares them to meet student needs on day one. It's a meaningful difference that, quite honestly, all children should be able to experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. We have a last public testifier, Mr. Matt Schaefer.
Chair Breyer, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Schaefer. I'm the teacher and the policy director at Ed Allies. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1138 as amended, and want to thank Representative Sensenmuer for her leadership and vision in working to establish this needed pilot program. I want to highlight a few thoughtful elements of the bill. First, the tuition support, and most importantly, stipend on lines 113 through 115 will pay people for the work of becoming a teacher. I wish that was an unremarkable concept and just a given, maybe someday. The stipend for mentor teachers on lines 116 through 117 demonstrates the recognition that being an effective teacher mentor requires a distinct set of skills and capacities on top of a teacher's core responsibility to their students. Mentor teachers really make up the backbone of a school. They are teacher leaders and supporters of the next generation of educators. In addition to being paid, they deserve to be developed, which is why we support ongoing training and PD for cooperating teachers. Broadly, we are supportive of prioritizing educators of color for this pilot and believe this pilot will fit well alongside the menu of initiatives working to diversify the teacher workforce. A couple of pieces of feedback on the bill. On lines 2.17 through 2.19, they mentioned priority being given to providers with the highest number or percentage of teachers filling shortages areas as defined in section 122A.06, subdivision 6. Our recommendation is that line be amended to the definition 136A.1275, subdivision 1, paragraph B, as that definition of shortage areas actually identifies specific persistent licensure areas and is aligned with both Minnesota-based student teacher grants and teacher shortage loan repayment eligibility. This definition would prioritize residency programs that are training candidates who would definitely be eligible for these additional funds for student teaching and loan forgiveness to ease the financial burden of using this pathway to enter the teacher workforce. Finally, line 3.5 notes eligibility for candidates seeking an initial licensure. We think one way to support Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers to move up the tiers would be to expand eligibility for the residency program to allow teachers who already have experience teaching in schools to access this high support path toward a Tier 3 license. Thank you, Representative Sensenmuer, for your leadership on House File 1138. Thank you, Chair Pryor, for the opportunity to testify. Thank you all for your public service to the state.
Great. Thank you. At this point, members, we can have questions and discussion on the bill before us. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. I have one, I love the program. I love anything that we can get mentorship with teachers, especially teachers that are representative of what Minnesota looks like. I really appreciate that. The only question I have is, how are we guaranteeing that out of these 400 teacher candidates that there are candidates out in greater Minnesota?
Representative Sensenmuer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for the great question. I am going to see if I can get some assistance from Dr. Bailey on answering that question. I think that's a really good point.
All right. Dr. Bailey, and yeah. would you like to repeat the question or?
Okay. Oh, no, I think we're okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Yeah, it's a great question. So there's language that allows us to prioritize an equal or as to the extent possible distribution between the metro area and greater Minnesota. As the person who oversees our grant specialist, I can say what that looks like in practicality is it becomes part of the scoring criteria when we award these grants, so that there's points given to individuals who represent those different areas. So if we get someone from Greater Minnesota, it bumps up their score so that we can help with the distribution to across across the state.
Thank you. Representative Keeler?
I guess my last question would be, how do we have a mechanism to report back so that we can see what that looks like? I just know that sometimes if it's not actually in language that there's a set percent or that there's actually a set guardrail, that they're going out to Greater Minnesota or tribal nations, things of that capacity. I'm just wondering then how, as the legislature, will we know that that's actually taking place?
Dr. Bailey.
Yes, that's a great question. So typically we publish our reports on the number of candidates who receive it, where they're, which institutions they're at, their kind of demographic information. So that would be something that we would provide to you all. And then part of that transparency is so that if there are updates to the language or revisions and accountability, that you all can obviously make those changes. I, in my tenure at Pelsby, am a big fan of us being more transparent and publishing those things. And so we're doing more to put on our website those reports so that both you all as state policymakers and our public stakeholders have access to that and hold us accountable to the things that we're supposed to be doing here. So we would want to publish that information and then respond to whatever changes you think need to be made.
Okay. Representative Keeler, is that
sounds good? Just maybe adding that we at this committee specifically would get those updates. That would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for presenting. Representative Murrah, I think this is a solid concept and really appreciate it as a building principal trying to hire people. There's a lot of solid work done here. I would echo Rep. Keeler's comments about not just the metro, but across Minnesota to make sure we're doing that. The question I have, and just maybe a point of clarification, so if I want to hire someone or be a part of this program, do they have to go through a teacher prep program prior to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for the question. As I understand it, yes, they would need to be currently enrolled in a teacher preparation program. Okay. And I don't know if Dr. Bailey wants to add anything to that.
I'll just add that, I mean, that is correct. The idea is that this would be a part of their clinical experience as they're completing teacher preparation. So it would take the normal practice of that 12 weeks and extend it to be more robust year long. So it only makes sense in the context of teacher preparation. But there are other kind of avenues towards supporting folks who are seeking their license other ways.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, I would just invite us to really look at you know, and just the totality of trying to expand our workforce and having really good representation, there are barriers to people being able to access. So I would really encourage us to look at some apprenticeship models. A number of high schools already have programs in place for pathways or apprenticeship models that are preparing kids. So I think this concept is great, but I think it can be improved on to continue to diversify our workforce. So
thank you.
I'll end with that.
Representative Bennett, any comments at this point?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just listening with great interest. Thank you. I would echo, I hope, as we move forward with this, that we will look at ways to expand it and be very creative, allowing various pathways to become a teacher. I think that makes our teaching field stronger in the long run. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Closing comments, Representative
Yeah, thank you. And just to kind of, you know, speak to the last couple comments, you know, I think that this is part of a larger package of legislation that we can think about how to address the teacher, you know, shortage, the teacher workforce crises that we have. You know, I think this model, you know, supports people who are in a teacher preparation program. It gives them mentorship. It gives them a salary. It helps pay for the school. But we know that there are other pathways and other ways that we want to get folks into the classroom. You know, I will say that I think something that this specific piece of legislation does is it really works to elevate the teaching profession, right, which is something that I know that this committee and the other education committee has talked about. Residencies are common in other kinds of professions. You know, we don't expect a doctor to walk into a surgery and just day one be ready to go. You know, we also don't expect them to work for years without being paid, right? Like, that is just not something that we expect from other professions, and we know that we are currently with our systems and with our structures, we're just really not elevating teaching to the profession that it should be. So I think this is one piece in moving forward on that, and I would ask for the support from the committee today for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. So seeing no more discussion at this point, Representative Hill renews his motion to re-refer House File 1138 as amended to Education Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. And we'll stay tuned. Next up is House File 1138 as amended is on its way to Education Finance. Next up for consideration is another bill authored by Representative Sensenmura, House File 1137. Members, it's our intention to refer this bill to Education Finance Committee also. Vice Chair Hill, would you like to motion House File 1137 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee?
Yes, Chair Pryor, that is my motion.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. All right, the bill is now before us then. And Representative Sensenmura, please introduce yourself again and present your bill.
Thank you. My name is Samantha Sensenmura. I'm representative from District 63A, representing South Minneapolis. I'm here today to introduce Bill HF1137, which regards the heritage, language, and culture teachers in Minnesota and works to increase the number of teachers using that pathway. So a heritage, language, and culture teacher is a teacher with a connection to a community's language and culture who uses this connection and language proficiency to support students as they learn academic content or the language and culture of that community. This bill creates a licensure pathway specifically for heritage, language, and culture educators. This bill includes funding for this program and staff support, as well as licensure costs. And this complements many of the proposals in the Increased Teachers of Color Act, which I know has been before this committee before. So currently in Minnesota, there have been historically, you know, limited or no licensure programs in Somali or Hmong, two languages that we know are very prevalent in our populations in Minnesota, and as well as a lot of other indigenous languages. During the 2021-22 school year, we had 29 teachers who held a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license in Hmong, and we had 6 teachers who held a Tier 1 license in Somali. So increasing this pathway, creating this pathway matters because there have been barriers to licensure for many heritage language educators. We know that multilingualism is an asset to Minnesota's K-12 students, and this will expand opportunities for school districts to demonstrate their commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion by elevating the status non-English languages and making them visible in our communities. So in October of 2022, districts reported that their students had over 300 primary home languages. And according to the most recent EL Education in Minnesota report, we had about 150,000 students that reported to have a home language other than English. And in my district, as I'm sure many of you can, you know, relate to this, I know that heritage language programs have been, you know, key to retaining families of color in our district when many of them have looked to leave. I want to just end by talking about a personal story. So before I came to the legislature, I worked for an organization that worked with students doing in-school writing programs, and we would then take their writing and publish it into books. And so we had a program that we did with a class of English language learners at South High School. These were ninth graders who did writing throughout the school year and then published it into a publication called Words Unburden Me. And I just wanted to read a short excerpt from that, and I apologize in advance for my butchering of Somali. So the passage says, I said to my older cousin, Makse muhim utahe in la barto samagliga. She said back, la antid afkina ma jari dontid. The translation is, I said to my older cousin, why do I have to learn Somali? She said back, without our language, you would not exist. Without language, we lose culture, and this can feel like we cease to exist. My family has experienced this personally. My family was interned during World War II, along with 120,000 other Japanese Americans. There, both my grandparents who went into the camps knowing Japanese left the camps really losing that language, and then as a result, really losing that culture. So we know that our language preserves our culture, that our culture helps us preserve ourselves, and this bill is supporting our teachers who are our language and our culture teachers, who they're vital to our classroom and our students, And they are really the ones that we should be protecting and preserving in our classroom with our young people. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. First testifier I see up is Alex Petrella. And then after that, Dequa Uhiden, if you can be ready to go. And so, Ms. Petrella, if you can introduce yourself for the records and proceed to their testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Buenas tardes. Me llamo Alessandra Vitrella y es un honor estar con ustedes hoy. Good afternoon. My name is Alex Petrella, and it's an honor to be with you all this afternoon. I'm here on behalf of Education Evolving, an education advocacy nonprofit, and I have the privilege of talking to you all about something that is very close to my heart. I'm a former ESL teacher, and growing up, my mother insisted that I speak to her in our heritage language, Spanish. This led me to then teach my students to honor and value their language as they adapted their tongues to the English language. This bill is the product of years of research and partnership with heritage language teachers across the state, who trusted us to find licensure pathways for their vital programs. Heritage language learners are students with a home language other than English. These students are part of a family or a community that values their home language, but that student may not have the skills to speak, read, write, or even comprehend that language. As Representative just shared, about 148,000 Minnesota students, so that's about 17% of our students, speak a primary home language other than English. The most common languages are Spanish, Somali, Hmong, Karen, and Vietnamese. Research tells us that heritage language instruction promotes parental and community involvement, it builds positive identity and a sense of belonging, and it involves and improves overall academic success for students. It also helps to cultivate the 21st century skills that employers are seeking, and it also makes English easier for students to learn. Before this year, there were no licensure programs for Hmong, Somali, or Karen teachers. None. Heritage language teachers tend to be ESL Tier 4 teachers who have to repeatedly apply for a variance for their license, or longtime educators who are unable to become fully licensed, often because their degrees are from their home countries. Current options for these teachers are unattainable, and Pelsby staff and our team are not aware of any heritage language teachers who have successfully attained full licensure. This bill creates a viable pathway for these amazing teachers who are already in the classrooms, and it enables Pelsby to dedicate staff and resources to support these heritage language candidates, and allows teachers to demonstrate their competency in their home language using alternate options. Thank you so much for your time and for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Petrella. Yes, please come forward. Our next testifier, Dequa Uhiden. And please identify yourself again and proceed with your testimony. And we are on tight time level, so we appreciate the brevity of our testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Good afternoon, committee members. Magacayga waa Deeqa Muhiyadiin. Waxaan u shaqeeyaa dugsiga Minneapolis Public Schools. Waxaan handaadiyaa barnaamijka af Soomaaliga lagu dhigo. Good afternoon. My name is Deeqa Muhiyadiin. I work for Minneapolis Public Schools. I am also a licensed ESL teacher, but right now I oversee a Somali Heritage Language Program. Prior to the creation of a K-12 heritage language program, which was done 2 years ago, we had a Somali heritage language course being offered as a world language, which is probably what you mentioned, the six teachers that were licensed in that area. With the creation of this program, we are going to be teaching kids as early as in kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. And what we did is that we started with K-1 and we're adding a grade every year. Currently, unfortunately, our teachers are working under variances, Tier 1 or Tier 2, which is due to expire at any point, depending on the number of years that they've been working as teachers. This program has been extremely beneficial to students. Some of the kids that I have seen being taught are very, very excited. They talk about communicating with their families, learning how to read Somali, saying colors in Somali. One of the reasons we proposed this program and we started this program was it was a demand that was put out by community members and families. They felt that there was a huge disconnection between them and their children, unfortunately. Their children would only speak English, while the parents would communicate in Somali. So if there were issues that the kids were facing, whether it was bullying in school or miscommunication with their teachers, they would not be able to eloquently express their concerns to their parents. Therefore, their parents would not be able to advocate for them. That led to tons of issues within families, and they demanded that we provide opportunities for their children to, so that they have deeper connections and they can be there as a part of the school district. I want to share with you a story of one of my favorite teachers. Her name is Miss M. As Alex mentioned earlier, a lot of the teachers that teach heritage language have degrees from their native country. Miss M went to Lafole University. Lafole, if Somalia had not gone to war, would be the Harvard or Yale or Stanford of Somalia, a very prestigious university. She also went to the University of Minnesota. She taught Somali at one of the high schools, and 6 years into it, she could no longer teach because her variance time had ended. So she was back to being an AE. Therefore, she had to lose income as well. She's a mother of several kids, and I remember her holding my hand and saying, Deka, could you do something about this? So today, if you hear emotion in my voice, it is, I feel like I'm fulfilling that promise by speaking for her. The lack of teachers that are licensed lead to high teacher turnover rates, unfortunately, and the time and resources that we build in co-designing curriculum with them and in teacher training. Imagine training a teacher, working with that teacher for 6 years, building curriculum, and then having to press reset all over again, and then working with a brand new teacher. That is my worst nightmare. Now I work with two teachers. They are teaching with four teachers technically, but two that we recently hired that are working with K1, K2 students, and we're bound to add a third grade to two of the schools that we're currently serving at the elementary level. Those schools are Lindale, that has over 23% of Somali student population, and Sullivan, that has 56% Somali heritage language speakers. At those school sites,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
I'm sorry, I have to end it. Yeah. So I just want to, and I've been told,
and it's such a great information and such a great story.
No, but I thank you. I just humbly request that you support this bill and allow for teachers who speak less commonly taught languages the space to be able to teach freely and for us to retain our teachers. I thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us today and fulfilling your promise. Thank you. We have Lee King as our last, another testifier on this, and I apologize if I have to interrupt you, but we're hoping that we can have 2 minutes of testimony. Please identify yourself.
My name is Gali King. I am a Hmong American woman and a fourth-year student at Augsburg University. Last spring of 2022, Augsburg offered their very first Hmong language course. I was one of six students registered. By the end of the semester, I was emotional due to observing everyone's growth with developing an understanding of the Hmong language, Hmong culture and customs, and every individual creating their own connection. Unfortunately, I did not have this opportunity in the K-12 system. Not many students were informed that this was a course available, thus explaining why there were only six students registered. In order for Augsburg to continue offering the Hmong language course for students, I advocated on social media to publicize that the Hmong language is an available course for current and incoming students to be informed and registered for fall session of 2022. The result was a success. Taking this Hmong language course has made a powerful impact on improving my connection with my identity, culture, and specifically with my community. I have become confident in myself to be involved in my community. That's why I believe support and funding for this is essential to BIPOC students thriving in school and beyond. Currently, I work as a direct support professional at Aurora Assisted Living LLC, which is a small Hmong residential-based senior assisted living facility. I am also a board member and secretary of a Hmong-owned nonprofit called Minnesota Jeja. Without taking a Hmong language course offered at Augsburg, I would not have the courage to advocate for my community. It is crucial to increase the number of heritage language and culture teachers in Minnesota because many of our youth will be positively impacted. It is not just about how heritage programs will affect our youth now, but also how it can help students find their identity and influence the communities, closing the achievement gap in education, addressing economic and health disparities for a vibrant Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Finally, Matt Schaefer, last testifier on this bill. And I will interrupt you, too.
Yeah. Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Schaefer, T-Chair, Policy Director at Allies. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1137. I want to thank Representative Sinsomer for authoring the bill. The testifiers who preceded me did a great job laying out the issues and establishing a rationale for the proposed solution. I'm just here to briefly echo their sentiments. This is an excellent bill that will increase teacher diversity and improve educational experiences and outcomes for kids. And Allies strongly supports the clear path for heritage language candidates that Pelsby and stakeholders have designed here. This is exactly what collaborative and solutions-oriented policymaking should look like. Our kids will benefit so much from the ideas proposed in House File 1137 because it creates another sensible path into the classroom and to make teaching a career. Thank you again, Representative Sinsomer, for your leadership. I'm working to ensure kids have access to the great educators they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Member questions, discussion? Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for this. I'm in one of those areas that even though we are rural, my husband taught in an ESL classroom and they had 56 different languages. And I have many people in my community who have a different native language at home. And their parents are worried that the children are losing their native culture. And this is just an exciting way for them to preserve that. And I know that in our community, this will be incredibly impactful. And I love the fact that we're thinking outside the box. We're able to have alternative pathways. This will be, I think, will be really exciting for our community. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering if Pelsby will be creating a rulemaking path for this pathway program. Will they be doing rulemaking for that?
I will turn it over to Pelsby.
Hi, I'm Michelle Hirschlott. Rulemaking is not necessary to facilitate this program. We'd be able to go from the get-go if this law passes.
Madam Chair. So just curious, so this is a separate pathway, though, correct? So why would rulemaking not be part of that? If you can just help me understand that.
Yes. Madam Chair, representatives, it's utilizing an existing pathway, but codifying the fact that these educators have a specific expertise and proficiency that may not be the typical pathway, such as going to get a master's degree in Hmong or taking language classes, which is a typical pathway that someone might take, is just not appropriate. And teachers will not go through that. It's extra, it's burdensome. So this would allow them to leverage their existing expertise, their language proficiency to demonstrate standards. Many of these teachers already hold a tier 3 or tier 4 ESL language, for example. So they would finish any outstanding method standards through a portfolio pathway and through existing mentorship that would be built in through this in order to get that tier 3 or tier 4 license that honors the work that they're already doing. So right now there's not, there are now two different providers that have licensure programs in this area. However, for those who are teaching or just to acknowledge the span of educators this could address, we just want additional clear pathways to get these educators the license that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's a great idea. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And we are running way beyond, okay? All right. I know that you, there's a lot that we could say right now at this point, that very powerful idea. Thank you, Senator Mura, if we are running over, but if you have a final comment.
I would just encourage people, I think everyone got a copy of this report. This report, like has been talked about, this policy is years in the making based off a lot of reporting and research that different organizations have done on this. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Senator Mura. And with that, Vice Chair Hill renews his motion to re-refer House File 1137 to the Committee on Education Finance. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. The motion prevails, and House File 1137 is on its way to Education Finance. Thank you, Representative Sensor Muir. It was not necessary, but the donuts were delicious. Thank you. All right, and we're going to move up with Vice Chair Hill. the three final bills that we heard introduced, and as Vice Chair Hill will tell you that some of this we're still working on, and so this will be an introduction of the bill, perhaps some discussion, but mostly just to get them introduced and so we have them out there for further work. Vice Chair Hill, would you like to move first House File 1257, which our intent is to lay it over at this point? So your motion, Vice Chair Hill, is to lay this over for further consideration, House File 1257.
So moved, Chair Pryor.
Thank you, Vice Chair. All right. Well, then, please introduce yourself and proceed with your first bill presentation.
Thank you,
and
Chair.
And where's the donuts?
And members. My name is Josiah Hill. I represent District 33B, which is in the East Metro along the St. Croix River from Bayport up through Forest Lake. I want to thank the Chair and members. In a few moments here, I'm going to individually be introducing three bills regarding PELSBY, which, as you know, is the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. Each of these three bills are still in the process of evolving as we are incorporating the ideas and concerns brought from many directions, including the administration's education proposal, those held by interested parties, and many of whom are here with us today, along with other stakeholders and advocacy groups representing many educational stakeholders and practitioners. Again, we're not looking to pass these bills in the form they appear today, but move forward towards that end, acknowledging that amendments will certainly be in the near future. These bills will be laid over for further effort and consideration, and we want to thank all of our upcoming testifiers and guests here today as we move through the hearing. With that, I'd like to introduce House File 1257, which is also known as the Removing Barriers to PELSBY's Licensing Process Bill, and I'd like to briefly highlight five key features before listening to some of our testifiers here today. The first of these features is that this bill will give an exemption of the BA requirements for those seeking licensure in visual and performing arts, as well as in the world languages areas. Second one is we'd also allow for teachers with three or more years of teaching experience in another state to have access to obtaining a Tier 4 license. The third feature I want to touch on is that this bill will also address the shortage of substitute teachers we are experiencing here in Minnesota with some creativity in the utilization of our ESP's paraprofessionals. The fourth step here is that this bill will also remove testing requirements previously included. We'll be hearing more about this element from our testifiers, but I'd like to note that there's been zero demonstrated correlation between the outcomes of such testing and success in serving students and families in our classrooms. Also important here is that there will be many, I am sure, that will raise concerns regarding the utilization of the science of reading in our discussions here. And moving forward, I'm excited to share that Rep. Edelson has a high-quality bill that we'll be hearing in the next week or so that will invest in ensuring that teachers are trained and well-versed in this area as we address our state's literacy challenges as we emerge from the pandemic. On one last note, I have become aware in the past day or so that there has been some findings that some of our colleague teachers from the international community have faced some significant challenges around when their licenses are able to be renewed. These challenges may have caused some intensive pressure on their timing for obtaining proper federal documentation to stay in Minnesota to serve the needs of students and families. And we will be working to seek a solution to remove this unnecessary barrier as we move forward and as we revisit this bill next week. With that, Chair Pryor, I'd like to welcome our testifiers.
All right. Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. And so I'm going to call forward first Laura Mogelson. Then next up would be Rodrigo Sanchez that's on Zoom, and Caitlin Snyder. We are looking for 2 minutes of testimony, and we'll hope that we can move through and that you can make your points. Thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I am from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. We are in support of House File 1257 to remove barriers to licensure. In Minnesota, PELSBY-approved programs must show evidence that teacher candidates have mastered standards for the content they are teaching and the general pedagogical standards for new teachers, as well as meeting statutory requirements, such as addressing the signs of dyslexia, mandated reporting, those types of things. This is done through coursework, through modules, and experiences in schools, which includes observations of teaching by school and university personnel. A person cannot be recommended for a teaching license until they have successfully completed program requirements and demonstrated effective teaching practices. Someone may complete a program successfully and not pass the required licensure, content, or pedagogy exam, even though they have successfully completed a program. We support the examination requirement exemption for individuals who have completed a board-approved teacher prep program. This modification would move about 1,000 teachers who have met standards through their teacher prep program immediately to a Tier 3 license. So we urge you to support House File 1257. And I want to thank Representative Hill for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you. Thank you. On Zoom, Rodrigo Sanchez, please, if you can hear us, identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rodrigo Sanchez, and I am a third grade teacher at Garlow Magnet School in West St. Paul in the District of 197. I have been teaching here for 5 years at the school I proudly call home because I've been teaching and come back to the school I once attended to. I am here to support the amendment to testify the requirements proposed of the House file of 1257 to remove the barriers for the licensing. I am here to go ahead and give my little brief of story just about being the victimized of one of the NCLE's exams. Over the course of the 5 to 6 years that I've been a teacher, one of the requirements was to go ahead and pass all of those NCLE's exams. And over the 5 to 6 years, my tenured year was up during my first 3 years of my education here at my school. And with that being said, with not passing those exams, I was not being able to get granted a tenured, and I was continued to be on probation. That's when it all kicked in that I needed to go ahead and figure out my audibles. And I reached out to my university advisors. I reached out to my administrators to see what is it that I can go ahead and do. And at the time, it was, hey, keep going. Good luck. Keep trying. Here are some vouchers. At the time, I was putting money out of my pocket. And it was a sense of mental health for me that I was in a position that I granted from being here in administrators that I was doing an awesome job, that I was getting the support from my families and stuff. But those exams put me in a psychological method that, hey, maybe I'm not up to this job. Maybe I can't do the job that I need to do without passing the requirements that I have. So January came around, and I got some great news from some of my administrators from my university that they were curving this course. And with all that being said, all of my exams were passed with the curve, and I was able to now move on to that Tier 3 licensing, with hopefully I'm able to go ahead and get my tenured year within the end of this year. Look, I am here.
Mr. Sanchez, with that good happy news in your story, we're hoping that you can wrap up your testimony. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate all. I hope that, you know, I'm here as a teacher of color. I'm here as a teacher of Minnesota. And I hope that you guys are all here to support the thousands of future teachers of all races that don't have to go through the same thing that I go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience. Next, we're going to go to Dr. Steve. Yes, Steve Uwanski. And yes. You can correct me, please. When you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Uwanski, Superintendent Richfield Public Schools, and the Superintendent Representative to Pelsby. I'll let other folk talk to you about barriers. I'm here to talk about House File 1257 in terms of fiscal responsibility of our government and government overreach. Fiscal responsibility. According to the internet, Pearson collects billions of dollars in testing. Over $20 million contract with our state for testing, and countless millions from our residents of the state of Minnesota. So why in this case? Content, pedagogy, and basic skills exams. We often hear these tests are necessary to ensure we have a bar of standards for our teachers. So let's examine that for a second. I'm going to take the 5 seconds of my speech right now to look at every piece of research connecting these tests to student achievement. And that's it. How about 2 seconds connecting them to the science of reading? And how about literally any research connecting these tests to anything that our children need? You get the point. So here we are, spending millions of taxpayer dollars, requiring Minnesotans to spend their millions of dollars, requiring a test that has little to no connection to anything of value. Requiring these tests. What could be a more clear example of a waste of fiscal responsibility and government overreach? So please support House File 1257 and remove this arbitrary and useless barrier. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, final testifier is Mr. Matt Schaefer. Please, yes.
Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon again. Matt Schaefer, Policy Director at Ed Allies. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 1257. Ed Allies strongly supports the BA exemption for visual and performing arts as well as world languages and cultures. This opens up a pathway for diverse and non-traditional educators to share their rich experiences and unique expertise with Minnesota students. This change will increase the relevance and rigor of learning opportunities for all kids. We also support the substitute teacher pilot program in Section 12. This is a long overdue effort to address the horrendous sub shortage that is having a deleterious effect on students, losing out on meaningful learning opportunities, and stretching already stretched educators beyond capacity. Not having a wide enough sub pool continues to take prep time away from educators and administrators to cover classes, which causes people to be moved away from their primary responsibilities and duties. I personally know several educators who have left or are considering leaving their roles due to the lack of subs and being constantly asked to cover or feeling guilty about using their contracted time off, knowing it would force a colleague to lose out on their own prep time. Doing something, frankly anything, to increase the pool of Minnesotans who qualify to sub is the bare minimum of what needs to be done to begin addressing this crisis. This can't wait another school year. The consequences are too severe. We have one piece of feedback on the bill on lines 7.3 through 7.5. This would remove the requirement that a Tier 3 teacher not be on a performance plan in order to qualify for a Tier 4 license. We think that attaining the highest level of licensure should require a demonstration that educators are effective in the classroom. A Tier 3 teacher put on a performance plan can still apply for a Tier 4 license the following year once they have gotten the support needed to address areas of growth. We recommend amending this proposal out of the bill. Thank you, Representative Hill, for authoring the bill and hearing our feedback today. Thank you all for your public service to the state.
All right. Thank you, testifiers. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate what you shared with us. You know, at this point, I think what we'll do is, if it's all right with our bill author, Representative Hill, is have a discussion of the one that's before us. But before I end, I still would like to introduce the final two Pelsby bills because it is the package. But all of these bills that we're hearing right now are going to be laid over. So with that in mind, I'd like, if it's all right with our bill author, Representative Hill, to have the better discussion of this bill, and then at the end of this meeting, just quickly identify the final two bills and lay those over.
That's great. Sounds great, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Member discussion. Representative Mueller.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I do have two questions, and I'll try to be as quickly as possible. I'm looking at the bill language, and again, thank you, Dr. Bailey and Representative Hill, for looking at the substitute teacher language and for acknowledging that this is something that we've been working on for the last couple of years. I did want to look at line 8. Where am I at here? 8.28. And on here, I remember last time I entered this bill into our body that I asked that the subs receive a background check, and I was scolded fiercely because it meant that they didn't have fingerprint background check, even though we don't require that for janitors or our paraprofessionals. And so we compromised and had that on there. And then it still wasn't good enough because we needed to make sure that we had qualified people, or we had people who weren't going to abuse the kids in the building, which, you know, that's a shared goal. On 8.28, I have a question. It says the school district or charter school has requested a background check in accordance with the section. Does this mean that substitute teachers are able to be in the school without having a completed background check?
Dr. Bailey?
Dr. Bailey, would you like to address that? Otherwise, I don't have the answer to that offhand, but I can get it for you.
I'm sure Dr. Bailey can do it.
Thank you. So this actually is a combination of things. So to get the full license, they would still need the typical background check you get from the district, and they would get their background check from us as well. But the line, if you look on section 8.30 through 8.32, this part of this pilot is to allow us to give them that temporary license. So if they get that first background check, they can be in there temporarily while we're finishing and completing the federal one that takes a little bit longer. So it's still ensuring a background check, and they would still get that full one, but we're trying to, this was the compromise to help expedite and get them in that temporary position.
Follow up, Dr. Representative Mueller.
Well, I am a doctor, so thank you. thank you, Madam Chair. And I really want to make sure that's very clear, just because, you know, because of how much we have struggled in the last 2 years and how much pushback we received both from MDE and Minnesota and from Pelsby, frankly, about this provision. So let's just make sure that we have people who are background checked, since that was something that was incredibly important to you last time. And then the only other question I have is, I looked at the material that you provided, and I really appreciate you giving us some research about the removal of the licensing exams. And in there, you provided the examples of of Iowa, Montana, and New Mexico. And they had removed, I think it was, they removed their licensure exams in 2022. So, you know, as a fellow doctorate, we know that our references have to be in context. We know that in 2022, we have very little evidence on this actually working right now. But I wanted to know, do you know if their teacher prep programs are equivalent to ours, meaning that they're rigorous enough, which I would, you know, and I have talked about how we are concerned about the rigor of that. But is this just they removed the exams, or did they replace them with a different independent mechanism?
Thank you. Dr. Bailey?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Mueller, it's a great question. So two things. I don't know, obviously, we oversee our teacher preparation programs. I don't have the insight of their standards and things like that. I would always argue that our programs in Minnesota are the most rigorous, but that's because I have the bias of overseeing our teacher preparation department. I will say that they did remove those exams specifically for teacher prep completers. That's a trend we're seeing across the country, that states that do this. It's not for everyone. It's for those who complete prep. I would, in my meetings with some of those state workers when we have our national conferences, from what I'm understanding, a lot of that is aligned to the way they're revising their programs to help have that more kind of embedded assessment along the way. So I can't hand you a concrete, you know, example from them, but that's what we're anecdotally hearing in our conversations with them.
And then last, thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that. I am really intrigued by this residency program and feel like this could be an independent mechanism that we could use instead of. You and I are in agreement that these tests are not doing what they should be doing, but we are not in agreement that we should just have a complete disregard of independent mechanism right away. And so that's why I think that, you know, just relying on a rigorous teacher prep program, as we are working on aligning that, because we have received testimony about how they are not being prepared, how teachers are not being prepared. That's why I think that, you know, if the test can't be passed, even though they've passed a rigorous teacher prep program, then they are not aligned. They are not aligned. They're either not being prepared or the test is not correct. And so that's why I think it's really important that we look at alternative methods and that we do not disregard completely the independent mechanism for a licensure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A comment at that on this?
Chair Pryor, can Dr. Bailey respond?
Yes.
I'll be quick. I'll just say, if that context of the testimony you're speaking to is specifically around the issue of literacy, I will say two quick things. One, we actually have a higher pass rate when it comes to the subtest that includes reading. It's been 88% since that science of reading's been embedded in it. So the high pass rate has not translated to closing that gap. We know we have a literacy gap in the state. Instead, I think you'll hear a bill coming up soon from Representative Edelson, and then we've actually implemented recently, just this year, new procedures to audit specifically for literacy in teacher preparation programs. And our teacher preparation providers are working with us on that. So I think that there are those other, like you said, those standalone methods that we can do to do this, and I think that we agree that that needs to happen. But the test is not doing it, because we've had a high pass rate across the board, and we still have literacy issues in the state. So I just want to put that on the record. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And Representative Bigberg.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quickly, I want to jump ahead. I know we're not going to have time to discuss it, but 1268, the makeup of the Pelsby Board, and really the bills we haven't had a chance to discuss. I'd love to work with you, Representative.
And Bill. We haven't discussed it in this meeting, but we will bring them back and discuss it, without a doubt.
Perfect. Okay, I was understanding that we were just...
No. Okay. They're all being laid over, and the bills that we've not had time to really present and discuss, we're just getting them in the committee today, and making that step.
I misunderstood. I apologize.
Thank you for asking the question and getting the clarification, because we don't want to leave with that kind of misunderstanding. But I think, you know, the hope is that we have had a discussion on this bill, and that, you know, there might be further work and further questions to the author, to Dr. Bailey and Pelsby on this particular one. But at this point, it's going to be laid over. If we, let's see, we are laying over that bill. So actually, it's your motion, Vice Chair Hill, to move House File 1268. That's the next bill. Sorry. It's our intention to lay over the bill, and we'll move on to the next one. So we have this. The current bill is being laid over. That's 1257. And what I would like to do is just bring up these bills, lay them over, and know that we're going to bring them back with the amendments ready to go, and we'll discuss them with the amendments on the final two bills. So the next bill up is House File 1268, which is going to be laid over. We're looking on further work on this bill. Vice Chair Hill, if would you please make the motion to lay over 1268?
Thank you, Chair Pryor. That's my motion.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. I'm hoping there's no discussion, but an understanding that we're just laying over this bill. Mm-hmm. So House File 1268 is laid over. And then finally, we have House File 1224. Vice Chair Hill, if you would please make the motion to lay over House File 1224.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. So moved.
All right. House File 1224 is laid over. We're going to be working on those. We want to discuss those with the amendments at, in an upcoming meeting. All right. So we have the presentation from Pelsby today. We have had before us the beginning work for all five of the bills. Appreciate your keeping up with me and being tolerant of our time constraints and committee time, and look forward to the further discussions. Thank you for being with us today, and thank you for your work. And with that, we are adjourned.